Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Robert Spencer is our guest that joins us now. Robert is the director of Jihad Watch. It's a program of the David Horowitz Freedom Center, and he's the author of 16 books, including the New York Times bestseller, A Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades. Last night, was corresponding with Robert about being on the program, I wanted to speak with him about an article that he wrote about Lindsay Lohan. The article was actually published in The Hill. A lot of folks are probably familiar with that website, The Hill. And they agreed to post it out there. They posted it. And then all of a sudden, they received a tremendous amount of pressure from the leftists and Islamic supremacists and so forth. And suddenly, The Hill then pulled the piece that they had published on the website. Now, we're going to talk about that piece, and you'll see that there's nothing in that piece that is offensive. All there is, you know, the truth about what Sharia law teaches and what Muslims believe and so forth, and a couple of comments about Lindsay Lohan herself. But other than that, there's nothing else in the piece that would require them to pull it down other than just giving in to the pressure that they receive from, you know, Muslim supremacists and so forth, Islamic supremacists and leftists that came to their defense in this event as well. Here to talk about that is Robert Spencer. Robert, it's a pleasure to have you back on the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Great to be back, Pastor. Thank you.
Well, Robert, why don't we start first with the original article that you wrote about Lindsay Lohan. She, of course, has kind of been the poster child, unfortunately, but the poster child for making bad decisions. And the American people, and maybe even broader than that, I guess, across the world, internationally, have watched this young woman basically self-destruct with these number of bad decisions that she has made and so forth. And most recently, it's been reported that she has converted to Islam. And in the article, you're basically just pointing out that this is the worst decision or worst life choice that she's made thus far. Is that an accurate summation of what you write in this brief article?
Yes. It was just a survey of how many converts to Islam have become radicalized and turned to jihad. I said, of course, Lindsay Lohan is not going to do that, but she should ponder why that happens. Mm. And also, I mentioned in the piece, some of the pieces of the Quran and Islamic tradition that disenfranchise and discriminate against and marginalize women.
Hmm. In the piece there, it says Lindsay Lohan has sparked widespread speculation that she has converted to Islam by deleting everything on her Instagram account except for an Arabic greeting. Tell us what that greeting is that she put on there, and what does it mean?
She put on Alaykum Salam, which is kind of an odd thing for her to put, because actually, if a Muslim is greeting another Muslim, he says, Assalamu Alaykum, which is peace be upon you. And then the person who's being greeted responds, Alaykum Salam, and also upon you, or peace also upon you. It's the response that she gave, actually. I don't know why she picked that. But in any case, it is peace be upon you, which is the particularly Islamic greeting that only Muslims give to other Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Islamic law forbids them to greet non-Muslims with that greeting.
I see. Her mother has, and you put this in the article as well, has denied the claim that she's converted to Islam. But Lohan herself, who lives in Dubai, she has not denied it at all. In fact, she's received a number of congratulations that have poured in from Muslims around the world, right?
Yes, and she hasn't said, wait a minute, I haven't converted. And she's spoken in the past very highly of the Quran, said that she's reading it and it's helping her spiritually and so on. And so I think it's still an open question as to whether or not she's actually converted. But her mother does deny it, and so I suppose time will tell.
Mm-hmm. She made some similar comments to this back in 2015. You quote this in the article. She said, my very close friends who have been there for me a lot in London and are Saudi, and they gave me a Quran, and I have brought it into New York because I was learning. It opened doors for me to experience spiritually and to find another true meaning. This is who I am, she says there. So it sounded like in 2015, there were certainly, you know, some, it would lead people to believe that she was interested in or possibly even have in some way converted towards Islam, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly. I mean, this is who I am. Sounds like she's saying this is who I am is somebody who believes in the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
That's the context.
Mm-hmm.
So it's certainly she has a great admiration for Islam, but I don't think, as I said in the article, it's an informed admiration. I doubt that she has any awareness of the misogyny or violence that is within the Islamic text.
Well, let's talk about a little bit of that. When she says, you know, I found the true meaning and so forth in the Quran, there's very disturbing things there to be found. Things like they sanction wife beating in a certain passage of the Quran and so forth. We've witnessed honor killings and these types of things taking place even in the U.S. here as well. What are some of the other aspects related to women that she just must be oblivious to? Otherwise, you know, you would never say that I found my true meaning here when it is so disparaging to women.
Well, the Quran says that if you are having, you have a court case, that there should be one man testifying or two women in his place. In other words, a woman's testimony is worth half that of a man. Also, women's inheritance rights are devalued. If someone dies and has sons and daughters, the sons get more of a share than the daughters. This is all in the Quran itself. Of course, there is also the child marriage. The Quran, in speaking about divorce, it specifies that the rules for divorce also apply to women who have not yet reached puberty, which suggests that they're getting married. And so there are all sorts of things, the polygamy as well, in the Quran that devalue and disenfranchise and are harmful to women.
You know, when she makes this statement about apparently converting to Islam, we just have to wonder, you know, is she prepared to really then go out in public the way that we see the women in Islam go out, you know, with everything covered except for, you know, just the eye slits there, basically, and the except for her face and hands, I guess, would not have to be covered according to the injunctions that are found there in certain teachings of Islam. There's that and other things that you just have to wonder, is she prepared to do those types of activities?
Yeah, almost certainly not. And probably she doesn't even realize that these things are really aspects of Islam. Probably her Saudi friends that she mentioned, that you quoted earlier, are telling her that Islam is wonderful and tolerant and protects women's rights and values women and so on. And so she doesn't likely have anything else to go on.
Mm-hmm. She would have to be, if she accepted it as the way it is and the way it's taught, she wouldn't be able to go out into public unless she was accompanied by a male guardian. That's per
yes.
Islamic law. She would have to be judged as being, you know, somewhat deficient in intelligence and religious commitment, you know, because she's a woman and so forth. When we talk about these things, I'm just not sure. It doesn't appear that maybe she is fully understood what she has done. And maybe, like you say, she's accepted what her friends in Saudi Arabia or Dubai have spoken to her about Islam, or even the way President Obama gives this kind of rosy view of it as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That after all that we hear from Obama and from pretty much all major governing officials and public figures in the United States is that Islam is a religion of peace. It's been hijacked by a tiny minority of extremists, but every religion has its extremists. And above all, anybody who is concerned about jihad terror is bigoted, Islamophobe, and so on. And so probably that's along the lines of about everything she knows about it.
Mm-hmm. There have been others that have bought into that and then converted over and then found out, you know, just what they had actually gotten into. I'm thinking of that John Walker Lynn, and you mentioned him as well, where, you know, he goes over and starts fighting alongside the Taliban and Al-Qaeda against American troops in Afghanistan. What happened after that?
Well, he was captured, and he's in prison. He was not, oddly enough, charged with treason, which he should be guilty of treason. But the Bush administration did not wish to prosecute him in that way. I think that was a big mistake. And in any case, he is still in prison, but he will be out in a few years. And he is apparently even more committed to Islam than ever. And so he's probably going to return to jihad once he gets a chance.
Hmm. There was another case there with someone who was converted through listening to rap music and some of the kind of black grievance messages that are in there, and they had said that they discovered Islam through this. Tell us about that case.
This was something that happened both in the case of John Walker Lind and Adam Gadon. Adam Gadon was a young man from California, and I think he also lived in Oregon and Washington, kind of hippie parents, rootless, no standards or morals. And the upshot is that he converted to Islam and became high up in Al-Qaeda and even made a series of videos that were introduced by Ayman al-Zawahiri himself, the leader of Al-Qaeda after Osama bin Laden. And the essentially English spokesman for Al-Qaeda, Gadon was killed a few years back in a drone strike, but he was quite high profile for a while.
And all of these are examples of people that were, they saw something appealing in Islam that they wanted to convert to it, but then afterwards find out what it's really about. And after that point, for many of these, it's too late, right?
Yes. The death penalty for leaving Islam. And so it's very often happened. As a matter of fact, there was quite a high-profile Muslim convert a few years back who wrote a piece about how the Islam that he had discovered once he'd become a Muslim was not the Islam that he had been sold when he was converting. And he felt very disillusioned, but it's difficult to get out. As a matter of fact, that man, I won't name him, because he is still technically a Muslim. He has gone very quiet. He doesn't do the public work he used to do, but he still identifies as a Muslim because he knows that if he publicly leaves, he could get killed.
Now, when we think about Islam this way, and we talk about you know, the statements that are made by the president and others, and how Lindsay Lohan doesn't really realize what she's getting involved in, a lot of people, and you know this is how the response goes. You know it very well, maybe better than anyone, certainly better than most. But the response goes, now hold on a second. Yeah, there's a few bad apples in Islam that are giving it a bad name, but you know, there's a billion and a half people that are Islamic, and they're not all bad apples. How do you respond to that when people come at you for the types of comments that are made in this article?
Well, it's absolutely true that there are a lot of people who are fine people who are Muslims. That's a separate question, however, as to what the contents of the Quran are and what the teachings of Islam are. And that's what I discussed in the article. Is the fact that any given Muslim might be a horrific guy doesn't really tell us anything about whether Islam teaches jihad and the subjugation of unbelievers. It only tells us that this particular nice guy who's a Muslim is not waging jihad. But that doesn't mean that Islam doesn't teach it. And so we have to make a separation that's all too often elided and ignored between the teachings of the religion and the people who hold to those teachings. Mm-hmm. People have a variety of different influences and interests and perspectives. The teachings, however, essentially are readily discoverable and are an objective fact. And it is an objective fact that Islam teaches warfare against unbelievers. That doesn't mean that every Muslim will be pursuing it any more than every Christian turns the other cheek and loves his enemies.
Mm-hmm. Does it, you know, the president elect, who of course inauguration day is tomorrow, but he has said that, you know, they'd like to have some sort of more intense scrutiny or vetting of Muslims coming into this country. Is it possible to do that? Is there really any sort of a litmus test that can be given to those that are in Islam to try to weed out who is the type of Muslim you were just describing versus one who believes in jihad and actually believes all the teaching and practices all the teachings that are inherent in Islam?
No, there's no foolproof method, and certainly anything that's adopted by the Trump administration in that regard is going to have flaws. But there are certain things that can be pursued as indicators. And one of them, for example, is support for Israel. It's very hard to find a serious hardline Muslim who would even pretend to have no problem with Israel. It's a real hot button issue. And there are some others like that. And so a certain kind of questions could be asked that would be quite illuminating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and certainly there'd be a vast improvement over what we have now, which is essentially nothing in terms of vetting.
Mm. You talk about their view of Israel and so forth on your website, jihadwatch.org, www.jihadwatch.org. You have an article that was just posted today from my hometown of Buffalo, New York. It says a Muslim nurse says, "My life's calling is to take down these Jews." So can you imagine having a nurse in the local hospital system that has that type of view, and then you go in and you're a Jew there? I mean, I don't think you'd feel very comfortable under the knife in that situation, right?
Right, and it's astonishing, really, that there is anybody out there who would have a job like that. And imagine if he has Jewish patients. But, of course, nobody would have dreamed of vetting him or trying to determine his views on Israel and Jews. They would have thought that was Islamophobic to even try to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's out there as a registered nurse in Buffalo, and let's just hope he doesn't do too much harm.
Mm-hmm. let me ask you about The Hill, then, the article that we just went through that you were, a brief article that you wrote about Lindsay Lohan and so forth. The Hill originally published that article, right? And then suddenly they pulled it down.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they asked me for it. I had no interest in Lindsay Lohan. They asked me to write about her.
And so you do that. You write for them. They post it. How soon afterwards do they then pull it down, and why?
They pulled it down, I think, about maybe it was up for about a day. And they pulled it down because the whole day that it was up, they were inundated with the comments, with tweets, with emails, with protests from people saying it was terrible that they were publishing me because I'm such a horrible person and a racist, bigoted Islamophobe. They did not address any of the issues in the article or show that anything in it was false.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't, because everything in it is true. But the Hill succumbs to this pressure, and it's noteworthy that the people who were putting the pressure on them are people who have denounced all opposition to jihad terror as Islamophobia and blamed the U.S. for jihad activity. So if they got their way, all of us would be silenced and the jihad would be able to advance unimpeded and unopposed.
Mm-hmm. Did they contact you at all when they took it down?
Nope. I just noticed that it was gone when somebody told me.
Hmm. Have you written other articles for The Hill?
No, that was the only one.
The first one, and they come
they
to you.
They came to me. They asked me to write. They actually asked me to be a regular columnist, and then they had so much heat over this that all that's off.
Mm-hmm. So they just pulled it down from the website. When I went to go there to read the post, it just said access denied, and I thought, oh, okay. I didn't realize that The Hill was a for-pay site or something, and that I had to subscribe, and then. But everybody who goes there to read it at that location is getting the same message, right?
Yeah, it's just it's not a pay site. It's just that they took the page down, and that's what they have there now.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole article in its entirety, if anyone's interested, can be read at my website, jihadwatch.org.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ended up going over there to read the article, as you mentioned, in its entirety. Now, you say in your comments then about what the Hill has done, not only do you point out just about how it was cowardly what they did, and it's going to actually cause more problems because once you show these people weakness, it only emboldens them, right?
Yes. And so now that the Hill has shown that they will bow to pressure if they publish anything that's out of the line of the leftist agenda, we can be sure they never will again, and they will be subjected to more demands such that their compliance will be made total.
Mm-hmm. And in that same response, you mentioned that you would be happy to debate, you know, any serious leftist or Muslim spokesman that wants to talk about the points that you made in your original article. You'd be more than happy to do that, right?
Absolutely, yes. No problem. But, of course, they don't want to debate. They just want to shut down their opposition.
Mm-hmm. Boy, it seems similar to what took place there at Charlie Hebdo in Paris, right? I mean, they were told, you will not publish certain things. In that case, a caricature, I think, but you will not do it. And originally they refused, I think, since that they went ahead and posted it, I mean. But since that point, there's been so much more pressure and, of course, the horrible acts that took place there as well, that they basically have finally been silenced. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. And this is what happens in every case.
Hmm. Well, Robert, I mentioned to you earlier, we only have a couple more minutes before we have to close out the interview, but what would you encourage then President-elect Trump to do related to Muslims here? Would you put like a moratorium on mosques being built? Would you help to develop a better way of finding out if someone has been radicalized? What specific steps would you like to see a Trump administration do?
Well, before there's a moratorium on mosques being built, I'd like to see mosques called upon and required to institute programs to teach against the understanding of Islam represented by ISIS and al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. They claim to condemn and reject that understanding, and yet there's not a single such program anywhere in any American mosque. Now, if you think about that, that's quite remarkable, given the fact that there have been quite a few American Muslims who have succumbed to this ideology and attempted to go over to Syria to join the Islamic State, or who have waged jihad here. And so these programs are needed. And if American Muslims do indeed reject that ideology and stand in defense of the United States, then they should have no problem instituting that kind of program.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly I agree with the president-elect that there needs to be a moratorium on immigration from terror hotspots. This is just common sense. Either we allow for Americans to get killed by jihadis, because there will inevitably be an unknowable number of jihadis among these refugees, or we inconvenience some people who might want to come into the United States and are peaceful for a temporary period. It's either or. It's either some people are inconvenienced temporarily or some people are killed.
Mm. I think that's what is the real issue here, is that people think that Islam is a religion just like every other religion, and they play down or completely ignore the military aspect of it and also the political aspect of it, that basically will not allow any other opponents to that. That part of the scheme in that, part of the teaching in that, is to eliminate any sort of opposition to it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They have no interest in engaging any opposition or discussion or debate. They just want to shut down their opponents,
mm-hmm.
and discredit and demonize and marginalize them.
Yes, I don't think that it's worthy of the same type of religious freedom that we grant to other religions because of those two types of components there. And I think that's where we should have the discussion about, do we just grant religious liberty willy-nilly just to anyone? Well, Robert, thank you so much.
Yeah, religious liberty is not a license to commit sedition and subversion.
Right, exactly. Robert, thank you so much for writing this article and for the work that you do there at Jihad Watch. We really appreciate it, and thanks for visiting with us for a few moments today.
Thank you, Pastor.
All right, you're welcome. That was Robert Spencer. He is the director of Jihad Watch. The website is www.jihadwatch.org. The first article we were talking about was the one related to Lindsay Lohan and how she may have made the worst life choice yet. And then the other one was about The Hill pulling down that article. Remember this, the Lord Jesus Christ said, he said, you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth. To keep this ministry strong and coming your way, you can make a financial gift at knowingthetruth.org by clicking on the donate button.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.